know, have any of you had friends or people in your lives that were vastly different than you? Okay. We've all had people who are vastly different than us in our lives. Growing up, I had a friend, and she was a really close friend of mine, and she was Chinese. And I never really thought much about it. I mean, she and I looked as different as night and day. I had super blonde hair, if you can believe that. I used to be one of those towhead blondes, you know, very, very white blonde hair when I was little. And it's darkened up as I've gotten older. And she had jet black hair. And that's just the way it was. And we were fantastic friends, and we're still friends to this day. But we were very different. Our home lives were different. What we ate normally was different. We were very different, but we had a great friendship. We still have a good friendship. I have a cousin who is vastly different than me. And God has a funny way of working things out. Some of my cousins have jet black hair, really, really dark, dark hair. And all of their children ended up having blonde, tow blonde hair like myself. So whenever I'd go out with their kids, with my nieces and nephews, everyone thought they were my kids because of the hair color. And they didn't think they were my cousin's kids. But my cousin and I are very, very different. He is not an atheist, but he's pretty far away from God. And he and I have very different viewpoints. And we do have a bit of a, I don't know if it's a competitive spirit between the two of us. I wouldn't exactly call it that. But I do remember that my grandfather got out the encyclopedia so that he could check which one of us had the right answer. Because, you know, we were both convinced we had the right answer. And I'll just let you know, the lighter head person did indeed have the correct answer that time. We have people in our lives who are very different than us. We have people who look different than us and people who behave differently than us. Some of us have friends that are not Christian people, which makes them kind of separate and different than us, but we still are friends with those people. I want us this morning to think about a certain group of people called the Samaritans. The Samaritans. Now, Jesus often interacted with the Samaritans, and so I thought we should know who they are and how they were different from the rest of the Jewish population, and what was special about the way that Jesus interacted with them. So we're kind of wanting to learn a little bit about the Samaritans. Now, there are some things to know about the Samaritans. And I'm going to show you just a little bit here. I've got a map over here. And you can see that the area of Samaria is right up there. See it? So Samaritans were, you guessed it, from the area of Samaria. Okay? First of all, they were from the area of Samaria. Now, there are some specific things about the Samaritans that you should know. Samaritans were considered a half-breed of people because of their intermarriage with people from foreign lands and foreign religions during the period of occupation where many were deported to Babylon, Assyria, and Syria. So you remember when the deportation took place and they were taken to Babylon, and then they intermarried different people groups. They started to adopt other religions. And so then they would come back. And if you want to, here, I'm just going to give you the short version of this so you're not trying to write all of this down feverishly, okay? They were considered half-breed, and they believed a bit differently than the Jews. If you just put those two things down on your line in your bulletin, you'll be fine, okay? I don't want anyone getting upset here. So they were taken off to foreign lands. They intermarried, and those peoples had other gods other than the God of Israel, other than the God that they knew and had trusted. And so they kind of adopted those things. Then they came back. They were repatriated, but they brought some of the other religions with them. Then there was a period of time where they were delivered or scourged of some of those beliefs, and they had kind of gotten back on track with Judaism, but they still had some differences. And these are what some of the other differences were. Samaritans, though of Jewish belief origins, only accepted the first five books of the law as important. Okay? So they only accepted the first five books of the law as important. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. That was it. Okay? They also built their own temple on Mount Gerizim, claiming that it was the site that was blessed of God and would be the building site of the future second temple. Now, the Jews knew that the second temple was going to happen. I'm going to try and remember. Nope. Middle? Aha. Okay, so here's Samaria right here. Mount Gerizim is like approximately right in there. And Jerusalem is down here in this area. Samaritans believed that the temple was going to be built on Mount Gerizim, and they should worship at Mount Gerizim. Jews believe that the temple should be in Jerusalem, and that it's going to be right there. Okay, so there's a difference in location, belief of location, of where the second temple is going to be. And this is pretty important. Now remember, they only accepted the first five books of the law, which means that they didn't accept the prophets, okay, and there are other books in the Jewish history that they do not accept. So, something else you should know is that Samaritans only celebrated the feasts of Passover, Pentecost, and booths or tabernacles, and the solemn Day of Atonement. They didn't celebrate all the other Jewish feasts. So they only celebrated those three and the Day of Atonement, whereas the Jews celebrated, there's I think about seven different feasts. So, that was another difference. Now, Samaritans suffered persecution in the 6th century and were almost brought to distinction, except for two small groups still remain. Okay? And it was in the 6th century under Justinian and different people that they were brought almost to distinction, almost to extinction. Sorry, not distinction, extinction. There are two small groups that remain in Israel today. One is near Nablus, and the other one is near Tel Aviv. And Tel Aviv is in the northern part of Israel. So, these two groups of Samaritans still exist today, but they're much smaller than they were back in Jesus' time. Now, the Jews looked down on Samaritans. They just did. Was there anything wrong with the Samaritans? Not really, except for the Jews didn't agree with the Samaritans, and the Samaritans didn't agree with the Jews, even though they had the same origins, even though they were living in the same areas. Now, it's kind of interesting. This is something that I was reading about. Jews were so upset with Samaritans, they would go from the regions up here in Galilee. If they needed to get down to Jerusalem, down here in like the area of Judea, they would actually take a boat and go around so they didn't have to go through Samaria. Or they would go across over into the region of Decapolis and over in so that they could avoid the area of Samaria. Okay? That's how some people despised it so much. So what you need to know is, in short, Jews and Samaritans do not mix. They just do not mix. They despised and detested one another. That's something important for you to know. They despised and detested one another. This is kind of important because one of our very favorite Bible heroes interacted with the Samaritans quite a bit. I want us to look at a story this morning, and I want to point out a few things about it. Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. If we look in Luke chapter 10, in Luke 10, Luke 10, and we're going to look at verse 25. It says, "On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. 'Teacher,' he asked, 'what must I do to inherit eternal life?' 'What is written in the law?' he replied. 'How do you read it?' He answered, 'Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.' 'You have answered correctly,' Jesus replied. 'Do this and you will live.' But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?' In reply, Jesus said, 'A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed on by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." I want us to think about this a little bit. The man was on the road, he was traveling. And at that time, there were robbers and thieves who would come along and take advantage of single travelers. That's why you often traveled in groups, right? The more the merrier, because that way you were less likely a target. Now, there was oftentimes, the road between Jericho and Jerusalem was oftentimes traveled. And it was traveled by religious leaders quite often. You might remember that Jericho is one of the oldest cities in the world, and so they would travel that route. Now, why did the priest choose to pass by? Well, he may have chosen to pass by on the other side because he may have thought the man was dead, which would have precluded him from touching the man. See, in the priest's jobs, they were able to offer the sacrifices, which this always strikes me as funny, but they were not allowed to touch dead human bodies. They were not allowed to touch dead human bodies because then they would be considered unclean and they would have to go through a various process of purification, just as the others who touched the dead body would have to go through. So they were not supposed to touch the dead bodies. So the priest may have thought that the man was dead, and if the man wasn't dead, he'd certainly have to try and touch the man to find out if he was dead. So he didn't want to get involved, so he passed by on the other side. Now, if any of you had got struck by lightning or hit by a tree, and your neighbor next door comes over and sees you laying there, what do you hope they're going to do? Call an ambulance, right? Or get help. right? You hope that they're not just going to say, oh, well, guess it's time for me to go to the restaurant for a meal. You know, like you're hoping that they're going to help you out, right? Now, the Levite may have passed by and not helped because of likewise fearing ceremonial uncleanliness. Because the Levites helped the priests and they were part of the priesthood. So he also may have feared uncleanliness. He also did not help. So here's the thing. Both men in this story, both men, because of their religious social positions, would have been expected to show some degree of compassion, but didn't. Because they were religious leaders and they were there to help the people, they would have been expected to show some sort of compassion. And yet, they chose not to. They didn't show compassion. So, this is a Jew who has been robbed and beaten, laying there on a road. And one Jew comes along, doesn't help him. Another one comes along, doesn't help him, goes on the other side of the road. But someone else comes and helps him. The Samaritan man. It's important that we think about this. Because remember, Samaritans and Jews don't mix. There is a Samaritan man who came along that road. The Samaritan man helped the man, even though the man was a Jew. A rival of sorts. He helped the man, even though he was considered a rival. So what was Jesus' point in telling this story? We're going to think about that in a second. But I want you to notice the Samaritan man bandaged up the Jew. Okay? He touched him, found out if he was alive or dead. He bandaged up his wounds, put him on his own animal, his own donkey, took him to an inn, stayed with him to make sure he was going to, you know, be okay. And then, because he had to travel on, he gives the innkeeper 2 silver coins and says, take care of him until I get back, and if I owe you anything more, I'll pay for it. He doesn't even know this man. He just found him laying on the road. What compassion. What compassion this Samaritan had. The Samaritan man showed kindness. He showed love. What was Jesus' point in telling this story? Well, it's this. That even those we wouldn't normally associate with are deserving of human kindness. Everyone is our neighbor. Everyone. Even those we don't care for, disagree with, or flat out dislike. Do you have anybody you just flat out dislike? Somebody you don't care for? People you disagree with? People who are different than you? They're all deserving of human kindness. All deserving of human kindness. Even the ones that are persecuting you, they're deserving of human kindness. It doesn't say you have to be best friends. It says deserving of human kindness. Showing compassion and showing kindness. Kindness and compassion are important. I have received a lot of different kindnesses, and I've spoken of many of them. And sometimes the kindness was really small and something pretty insignificant. There's a gentleman that I know that growing up, he had quite a few difficulties. And as an adult, he's experienced a lot of difficulties as well. And some people look down on him. And you could look down on it. But I choose not to see what people are looking down on in him. What I remember about him is his kindness. He was extremely talented. He was a fun person. And I remember his kindness. I remember we were on a band trip, and I was finding out that I was having a bad reaction to having Benadryl, or too much Benadryl, and I was so dopey I could not even feed myself hardly. I went to put my spoon in a dish of pears, and the whole thing just slopped over, and I was sitting with him, and he just looked over, he didn't say anything, and he just gave me his dish of pears. And I thought, that is so sweet and so kind. I mean, as teenagers, he could have said, you just spilled a whole bunch, But he could tell I wasn't feeling good, for one thing, because I was not normally that uncoordinated. So I don't take Benadryl, in case anyone needs to know. I don't take Benadryl. I'll take Claritin, but I can't take Benadryl for some reason. So I just remember his kindness. And that's what I choose to think of him, and his kindness. There are other kind acts that people who didn't know me have sometimes done. I was reminded the other day of a summer that I was traveling with another young lady, and we were on the road a lot, and we'd stop for gas and coffee a lot, and she was drop-dead gorgeous. And everybody kind of would just go gaga over her. And it left myself, and when I had other team members, feeling a little bit like chopped liver, because everybody's, oohing and aahing over her. And she was a wonderful person. And I'm glad that they did. And, I was glad to have her along. But, it gets pretty discouraging. And one day we stopped for gas and coffee. And we went in, and she paid for her coffee and came bebopping out to the van. And I went in, and I paid for the gas, and I had my coffee. And the gas bar attendant said, "Oh, yours is free." I said, "No, I can't pay." No, yours is free." "Well, thanks. That's pretty awesome." So I went out to the van, and I said, "He just gave me a free coffee." She goes, "Well, he didn't give me a free coffee." Lord bless that man in that gas station. It made me feel a whole lot better about myself, because I was feeling about this big by that time in the summer. But it was a small kindness, but it meant the world. The Samaritan man, he showed decent human kindness to the traveler. Kindness that was important. He showed that he was a true neighbor. Jesus' point in telling the story is that we're supposed to do kind things for people we flat out don't like. We're supposed to show human kindness. People we dislike, show human kindness to them. That's what we're supposed to do. That's why being a Christian is hard, not easy. As you hear about a lot of people who want to take revenge, right? "Well, I'll fix their little red wagon, and I'll do this, and I'm just, well, the next time they ask me to do something, I'm not going to." Now, I'm not at, God does not call us to be doormats, but he does call us to human kindness, okay? So, if you are loaning huge amounts of money out to people, you don't have to do that. Do it if God leads you to do it, but you don't have to do it. If it's an act of human kindness, like taking them to the hospital, taking them to the grocery store, or, if it's doing something small for them. I know there was more than several years ago, I was extremely sick, and I wasn't supposed to be climbing on anything for quite some time, and I had a light bulb in my kitchen that went out. Ladies, you know how important it is. Gentlemen, you know too how important a kitchen light is in your kitchen, because you need to be able to see to cook. And I couldn't get anyone to come and change the light bulb for me. That was difficult. Couldn't get anyone to change the light bulb for me. Until my parents came out to see me. They took care of that right away. And I appreciated that. It's important. Small acts of kindness. Human decency. I want us to think a little further about another interaction with a Samaritan. Why did Jesus talk about this story with the Samaritan? His point was to say to the Jews who he was talking to, and it was like an insult to their face, that the one who acted as a neighbor was one whom they would have normally despised. That was like throwing it right in their face, saying, who acted as the neighbor? The Samaritan did. Even though it was somebody that they disliked and they despised, that person was the one who helped them. I want us to look a little further, because Jesus interacts with someone else. Jesus interacts with a Samaritan woman. If we look in John 4, Jesus speaks with a Samaritan woman, and so they're obviously not going by the normal way of going around Samaria. They traveled in regions where Samaritans also were. In John 4, it says, the Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John. Although, in fact, it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. When the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, and did also his sons and his flocks and herds? Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. The woman said to him, sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water. He told her, go call your husband and come back. I have no husband, she replied. Jesus said to her, you are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true. Sir, the woman said, I can see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. Now remember, she's thinking about Mount Gerizim, right? And she knows that he thinks it's going to be Jerusalem. Jesus declared, believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth. The woman said, I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, I who speak to you am he. Just then his disciples returned, and they were surprised to find him talking with a woman, but no one asked, what do you want, or why are you talking with her? Then, leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? They came out of the town and made their way toward him. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. Then his disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? My food, said Jesus, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Do you not say 4 months more and then the harvest? I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. Even now the reaper draws his wages. Even now he harvests the crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps, is true. I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work, and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. This is amazing. They are journeying. A group of Jews, a group of Jewish men are going through Samaria. Jews and Samaritans don't mix. They're going through Samaria. And Jesus goes to the well, sits down, starts up a conversation with a woman who's come to draw water. Okay? Now, here's the amazing thing. The interesting thing is that the disciples are surprised that Jesus is carrying on a conversation with a Samaritan woman. Okay? Like, they normally just don't carry on a conversation. And they were carrying on a religious conversation. And it was kind of political, too, because, you know, they're in the religious realm, you know, Mount Gerizim versus Jerusalem. I mean, it's a little political as well, political and religious. What do you not talk about with people? Politics and religion. Jesus breaks that rule, and he gets right to it, and he's standing there, well, sitting there, and talking with the woman, politics and religion, both. He's giving her the opportunity for living water, for the words of life, for eternal salvation. That's what he's giving her the opportunity for. She doesn't grasp it at first, but she's starting to catch on. She's starting to catch on, and she claims to her clearly that he is the Christ, the one to come that was prophesied, the Messiah that she has asked about, that he is it. Now, even more surprising is when Jesus doesn't respond the way a normal Jew would have responded to the question about worshiping on Mount Gerizim. Okay? So, if you want to know what to put on, the woman is surprised because Jesus doesn't respond the way she thinks a Jew would to her statement question about worship. She's expecting him to give the normal Jewish response and to look down his nose at her and tell her how she's wrong. That's what she's expecting, because that's what a Jew would do to a Samaritan. He doesn't do it that way. He says, there's more to worship than what you realize. The time is coming when you're not going to worship on Mount Gerizim or on Jerusalem. that it's going to be a different spot, that your heart is what happens. It's where your heart is, and wherever your heart and your spirit are, that's where you're going to be worshiping from. And he's explaining this to her. So she's surprised. It catches her off guard. He also knows all about her life, even though she hasn't told him about that. So she knows that he's special and that he could be the Christ. So the best part of it is the woman has friends. She goes and gets them. And they all listen to Jesus. He stays for 2 days. Now, do you normally spend 2 days with people you detest and dislike? I mean, some people have a hard time even getting through a dinner party sitting on the opposite end of the table from someone they detest or dislike. He spends 2 days with them, he and his disciples do. And they accept the teaching that Jesus provides them. Even though he and his followers were obviously Jews, they accept the message that he is the Christ. That's pretty profound. And they said, we no longer just believe because you came and told us. We believe because we heard it for ourselves. Pretty miraculous. They were mixing. The two groups that don't mix were mixing. And it turned out fantastic because people heard the truth, they heard Jesus, and they accepted him. That's great. That's fantastic. Jesus interacts with the Samaritan woman, someone who would have not normally interacted with. As Jews, they wouldn't have associated with them. But I don't know if you remember last Sunday I mentioned about Jesus loves the unlovable and he touches the untouchable. He is so special. And he asks us to be special as well. Called apart. Different. By this interaction, Jesus is proving his love for his outcast neighbor. He's living out what he was preaching. See, he had to live his sermon illustrations too. He had to live what he was preaching too. Jesus is living out the two greatest commandments. In Matthew 22, Jesus mentions what the two greatest commandments are. And you've already heard it this morning, but I just want you to think about it still. In Matthew 22, in verse 34, Jesus says, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. He was living that out. He was living it out. Love your neighbor as yourself. Essentially this, love God and love people. Be loving to his people. Love God, love people. You don't have to condone what someone does. To be kind, to show human decency. Even murderers need human decency. We had a very interesting summer vacation when I was young. There had been a murder that had taken place in the Wenatchee Valley, and they were looking for, we were on vacation out there, and they were looking for the person who had committed the murder. And my aunt lives kind of along the river, but up a little bit. And there was a gentleman who came down her road, and he had blood on him. And he was very dehydrated. And he asked my aunt, my cousin Christine, "Ma'am, can I have a glass of water? I just need a glass of water." And so my aunt and cousin had him sit down. And we were out visiting at that point in time. And he sat down and they gave him a glass of water. And my cousin said, "Well, you need to sit there for a while. You need to just sit there and rest for a while. And you need to drink some water and just rest." And I don't know if he was afraid of her or just so tired out. Anyway, he sat there. And the police came, because my aunt called the police. And they came, and that was the man who had committed the murder. And even murderers need a glass of water. Even people we dislike or don't like what they're doing deserve human kindness. Offering someone something to drink, it's pretty easy. Essentially this: love God and be loving to people. I'm not going to go into this, but if you want to on your own time, you can look at Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. It is a story of the sheep and the goats, and it's the story of the judgment that happens. And Jesus says to the followers, he says to everyone different things, and they respond, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink, or in prison and visit you, or sick and help you out?" And then Jesus replies, "As much as you did it to one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did it to me." In other words, it wasn't just to the people you liked. It was to whoever needed the help. Now, there are some people we just plain can't help. And there is that. But there are other people that we can help, that we can show kindness to, that we can do things and do what we can. I want to bring up Erin Carr for a moment. She died Friday morning. She was a really misunderstood individual. And she was treated poorly because of the marks on her face. I don't know if any of you know, some of you do know, all of the difficulties that she had, ways that she was left out, ways that she was pushed to the side, ways that she was discriminated against because she looked different. She had a difficult time with reading comprehension, dyslexia, keeping words front to back. She wanted to read really badly. She wanted to be able to do that. There were several things she really wanted to do. People picked on her. And that was awful. But here's something I don't know if you know about Erin. She had a tough exterior with an absolute heart of gold. An absolute heart of gold. She would take in a cat on a dime, okay? She loved cats. She was very concerned about children, and in fact, she worked with children. And she wanted to be able to advocate for other children who went through and were going through some of the same things that she went through as a child. She worked hard at that, the best she could. And she worked with children, and they would ask her about her face. And she'd say, "We're all different." She had a heart of gold. If she thought that you needed her gloves, she would give you her gloves. If she saw someone and thought they needed something that she had, she gave it to them. That's part of the heart of gold. Human kindness. Was she perfect? No, she's like the rest of us. However, she had a tough exterior with a soft heart, one that was willing to show kindness. the world has lost one more kind soul. Well, we need to follow Jesus' example. And how might we do our best to follow his example and love our neighbor as ourself? How do we love our neighbor as ourself? Well, we can offer someone something to drink. Many people go around dehydrated. Did you know that? Most of us are going around dehydrated in various stages of dehydration because we don't drink enough water, me included. So, if you're visiting with someone, offer them a drink. Drink of water. Choose to help when you can. Just choose to help when you can. Consider how you would like to be treated and treat others that same way. You might know that as the golden rule. Think how you want to be treated and treat them the same way. Here's something. We talk about the Open Arms Mission Barrel a lot here. Nearly 6 million people in Canada in 2021 experienced food insecurity, which is marked by a dramatic increase in food bank use. Okay. When was I hungry and you gave me something to eat? Sometimes you're able to give someone a meal. I did that on a plane for a young mother with a baby who had lost her wallet or something had happened, but I knew I was supposed to buy that young lady lunch because she had a long flight up to Anchorage to go yet. And that's when you're flying across country out to Seattle and then you got to wait until you get to Anchorage, and it's a long day. And sometimes you can buy someone something to eat. Sometimes you can't. Can you donate to a food bank so that people who are experiencing food insecurity can have something to eat? Generally, you can, right? And if there is anyone here who experiences food insecurity, please speak to us because we can help you out. And we'd love to do that. So don't be embarrassed or ashamed or anything. Just come to me privately and we will get you hooked up, okay? There are different things you can do. Who is our neighbor? Everyone's our neighbor. Should we follow Jesus' example? Yes. Is it going to be uncomfortable for us? Yes, you got it, absolutely. Okay. But I want us to remember, Jesus interacted with the Samaritans, with those he didn't care about. He cared about them, but generally Jews didn't care about Samaritans. He chose to care. Cared for people who were not like himself. In the end of Romans 12, it says, "Do not become overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good." We live in an evil world. Let's do all the good we can, while we can, to everyone we can. Because it's important. It's part of loving your neighbor as yourself. I want to encourage you this week. Opportunities will arise. Don't let them slip by. As much as it depends on you, try and do what Jesus would have you to do.